Hi, everybody. Good evening. Thank you for joining us here at New Jersey Revolution Radio for our weekly live stream podcast thing that we do. We do this every Wednesday at 8 p.m. We've been pretty successful in putting together a panel or an interview every week. This week, we came very close to missing out on our goal of having four panelists, but thanks, Melissa, for the save tonight, showing up a little bit last minute, but she definitely is going to add to this panel as an experienced organizer, so thanks, everybody, for jumping in. We'll go around the room a little bit and introduce our panelists first. Tonight is Christian Perez. Christian is a member of the Jersey Shore DSA. He's an adjunct professor and somewhat of a cranky podcaster himself. He has a podcast called Modernity and Absurdity. Chris, you're going to be joining the New Jersey Revolution Radio Network, and your podcast is going to go out on our feeds over the next month. Welcome to the crew, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and it's a privilege to be here. I'm glad to be a part of the team. Thanks for having me aboard. Podcast is 2.5 years old, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm an angry socialist. I'm a curmudgeon, but I just care about fighting the bad guys.
I don't think socialists should be happy people in this country. So if you're a happy socialist, does that jive? I mean,
There's a couple out there. Some people are just good natured and happy all the time. I'm not one of them, but
you could be happy, but you can't be a happy in a socialist mentality. Then you're delusional. That's the word for that.
Thanks
a lot. So on the podcast, you talk about what issues do you bring up on?
Yeah, so I try to talk about everything. Usually it ends up being me ranting about politics. I try to have a number of guests. I'm working on a hopefully 3 to 4 part series on conspiracy theories. That's a passion of mine. I teach a non-credited course here at the local community college on conspiracy theories. Traditionally, I studied political science, got both my degrees in political science. That's what I teach here in New Jersey. But I like studying conspiracy theories, why people believe ideas that aren't true. At first, it was people used to look at me sideways, but now it's become the political mainstream. Our president is the conspiracy theorist in chief, and I feel like it's something that's become more relevant. But I try to talk about a whole bunch of issues, but like I said, it always ends up being me ranting about politics. And culture.
That sounds like me in my real life every day. So it sounds interesting. And we start putting your stuff out tomorrow, and then every Thursday over the next 4 weeks, we hope to give you a boost and let people know about your work. It's always important to elevate anti-capitalist thought, especially when a brother's from New Jersey. So glad to have you. Also joining us tonight is Melissa Tomlinson, Badass Teachers Association. She's also works with the South Jersey Women for Progressive Change. How are you tonight, Melissa? Thank you for jumping in late.
Good. Thanks for having me back. Not that I was happy that I had a cancellation, but it freed me up to come on here.
That's what I mean. I couldn't believe you were actually free. I mean, you're never free. Right?
I know.
You're definitely one of the busier activists in the state and pretty soon getting ready to go back to school and teach our youth. So your time is going to get even more crunched pretty soon, huh?
Yes. Starting next week.
Oh boy, well, good luck with that. And finally, of course, my partner here at New Jersey Revolution Radio and the host of Wine, Women, and Revolution. Unfortunately, she can't be on the live stream tonight visually because of internet issues, and our crumbling privately owned infrastructure has failed once again. But nonetheless, Heather Warburton has made it here by audio. How are you tonight, sister?
I'm doing good.
Glad to see everybody. So tonight's topic, and we do have to thank somebody, right, Heather? We are here. We've been begging for money for weeks. We've been telling people they could go contribute a few dollars here and there at www.njrevolutionradio.com. You can hit the make a contribution button, a little bit, a lot. Monthly contributions are cool because then we can like budget and stuff. But we got a really great thing I saw in my inbox. Heather, we wanted to thank a new comrade of the show.
Yeah, we are thanking Dr. Steve Fenichel, who I also happen to be campaign managing for. A little plug there. But he made a donation for us. It's really appreciated. We appreciate every donation we get.
He did. It only cost $25 a week here, and the good doctor paid for a few of those weeks. So he really did make a nice donation, and like we said, you know, small things, you know, made the Bernie campaign happen. They make grassroots activism happen. We run a real lean program here. Heather and I have been doing this for nothing for a long, long time. So we know how to stretch a dollar, and every little bit helps. So thanks a lot. So on to our topic tonight, mistakes. We have all, as human beings, made mistakes. I've made several mistakes today. I'm sure I'll make more mistakes tomorrow. But I always say that the important thing you learn from them and you grow and you try not to make the same mistakes over and over again. And we came up with this topic a while ago, so I've actually had like a month or so to think about all these mistakes and what am I going to talk about. And I decided I'm going to ask all of you about the mistakes you've made, and I'm not going to talk about the mistakes I've made first. So I got to put my partner on the spot first. Heather, in leading up to this, what mistakes stand out to you that you've learned from?
I think a big one is I have been afraid to say no. Whenever anyone asks me anything, I have a tendency to say yes and then get very grumpy about the fact that everybody keeps asking me to do things. So that's what I've learned, that it's okay occasionally to say no when you really are overbooked, because you're probably going to do a half-assed job of things when you don't have time to do them.
Yeah. Quality over quantity, I think, is a rule there. You know, overscheduling is a common thing. We all wear a million hats, and Melissa has got to weigh in on wearing a lot of hats. And how do you keep things? I mean, you really, out of all of us, I say you've got the most balls in the air at any given time. How do you not overextend, or do you anyway?
There's nothing like putting me on the spot.
Of course.
Yeah, so we all know that I do overextend, and that's funny that Heather brought that up right away as one of her mistakes, because as I was leaving, you know, running through them in my head before the show, that is one of my biggest personal mistakes, is not taking enough time for myself to make sure that I'm recharged so that I can give everybody 100% of my time and of my effort on whatever, you know, whatever we take on together. It's important to recognize that you have a personal life. And unfortunately, because I've been so actively doing this for 5 years now, my oldest son, our relationship got a little damaged from it. You know, we're not as close as we are as my younger son and I am, because he was in high school and transitioning into adulthood. So I had my thing going and he had his thing going. So we kind of split almost right away in those younger high school years.
Mm. Wow, that's pretty deep. And thanks for sharing that. I know that's tough stuff to talk about it, but I can back you up a lot on that and saying, you know, I have 5 young kids, and there have been periods where I should have been home more. There really have been, and I admit it. And part of what inspired New Jersey Revolution Radio a little bit was being able to serve the activist community and do something that I can kind of do from home more. And luckily, you know, I had made enough friends being out there that I could start this thing up. But I feel you on that. And, you know, there's a balance. And when we talk about quality, the quality of your work goes up when you keep your relationships that should be important at the top of your priority list.
Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know anybody that doesn't overschedule. Christian, are you overscheduled as well?
Yeah. I mean, so when I first met you, it was at the Latino Action Network conference in Newark a couple years ago when
yes.
I was working with Peter Jacob. At that time, when I was on Peter Jacob's campaign.
I remember that. We talked in the bathroom.
I looked up on you in the bathroom. I saw your
yes.
tattoo. I said, "I'm going to stay in the bathroom." Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so for me, the problem was for me, especially at that time, I was working about 4 or 5, maybe even 6 different jobs.
Wow.
I didn't have a full-time position yet. So I was teaching at a couple of different schools. I was working as a house manager at a theater. I was helping to install blinds. And it's important to prioritize, but it's also piggybacking what Melissa said. It's hard to keep it all in, and sometimes it just starts to slip. Personally, I try not to spread myself too thin. And one of the biggest issues I had with organizing the Jersey Shore DSA is I have a lot of committed people, right? Mm. But unfortunately, there's just not a lot of us, and we're all working professionals. So it's important, and I think it's big because we all have goals, but unfortunately, time gets in the way, life gets in the way, and work gets in the way.
Right. Yeah. So I noticed that when I would get overworked, I'd get emotionally strained and I'd start to kind of lose it a little bit. I'd start having anxiety and panic attack stuff. So part of, you know, me going to therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy is identifying those symptoms earlier.
Yes.
Because I think since we all kind of admit that we do this and it's very common in the activist community, sometimes it just pays to know when the detrimental effects are starting to set in. Yeah. And you learn that by watching your own behavioral patterns and watching when things start to lose quality of work or quality of life issues start to come more into play. You see that a little earlier and you can head it off at the pass a little bit better. So as I've gotten older and been more involved and done different projects, I've found myself catching on that, hey, you know what? Kind of snapping at my kids a little more lately, you have that. And so, you
know,
I encourage
me down a couple times. I hear you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Listen, my wife is a saint, man. She's a saint. It's hard. It's a hard job being married to me or being, you know, in a relationship with activists because we're committed to changing the world too. But you know, if you got the right people around you, you can make it work. You know,
absolutely.
I think that. We can switch gears a little bit here. I know that one of the mistakes I thought of, and I was lying, I'll share my big mistake, was very early on I did a union organizing drive, and there were two locations, and we were running a vote at one location. And the other location we weren't sure about. We didn't have the right percentages of cards, and we didn't know those people directly, but that location that was going to have the election had connections. And a few of the people there said, run the vote over at the other place, run the vote over at the other place. And we did. We honestly were like, we don't have enough cards. We didn't feel the support, but they felt like that made them feel like we didn't trust them. And so we ran the vote. We actually won the vote up in Comcast of Fairfield. And they're still union brothers and sisters with the 827. I still every once in a while message with them on Facebook. So they're, you know, we're proud to have them in the local. But after that, the drive kind of fell apart a little bit. You know, the company clamped down. You know, they got rid of supporters at the other locations. And it did deflate our supporters. And I think it did bring down the drive. So I've always, throughout my entire career now, and I tell this story a lot because it just looms over my head. I don't know if we did the right thing. We might have ran a vote and lost at the other location, but I'll never know. I'll never know. I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
I think the important part was recognizing the fact that I kind of lost the trust of some of the people I worked with, and I should have listened to the working class people I was purporting to be organized rather than projecting kind of what I thought the right thing to do was. I don't know if anybody else has seen a drive end like that or seen something end because of, you know, somebody having a grudge against your tactics, but it does happen.
When I was younger in college, there was an attempt by the administration to let go of, I believe it was 32 non-tenured faculty. Just like at the end of a semester, let's get rid of 32 professors. And they ended up bringing back 24. And a buddy and I went around all over campus handing out flyers that we printed out ourselves. And I think, especially at the time, I was 22 year old Christian. I was overzealous. And my big problem was I tended to talk at people and not to them, right? I had all these things I wanted to say, all these injustices that were going on campus. And I guess the fact that I was so overzealous, or maybe that I was just visibly upset and angry, I think that just ended up turning a lot of people off. And that was probably my first foray into actually trying to organize something. But we ended up saving 24 teachers. So that's important. It was important to me.
Projecting on people is something I'm becoming more conscious of, you know?
I definitely think it's important to hear what people have to say. I mean, if they've taken the time to come to your organization, to come to your meeting, let them hear what the heck, you know, hear what the heck they have to say. As long as it's not some right-wing BS, you know, give them their platform.
Heather's a great listener. And she's a natural listener. She's the opposite of me. I'm a natural.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, you know, come on. That's my privilege when he came out. But Heather, you seem, you do listen well naturally. What have you had to learn more of, though, as here at New Jersey Revolution Radio, for instance?
Well, I think a big one, too, that I've learned kind of the hard way would be, to quote the good chairman, letting liberalism slide, because either you want a break, you know, you don't feel like struggling for what you believe in, you're exhausted, or it just seems like the easy route, not sticking to your cause and not standing up for what's absolutely right all the time, and being less lenient with, you know, or being more lenient with people that are your friends and not really calling them on stuff, like letting that liberalism slide in and just for your own comfort sometimes.
We're all guilty of that.
Oh, I don't think Mal would have mentioned it if it wasn't a common problem.
Well, who likes to bust their friends' balls? But that comes to the character of your organization and how they deal with conflict, right?
And I think dealing with conflict is another good organizing mistakes that, you know, not going to that defensive place when conflict arises, that conflict does not have to be a bad thing. Conflict can actually be very productive if handled well.
Yes, that's something we all learn.
I would add to that, on top of, you know, making sure you don't go to that defensive place, but making sure you deal with it when it happens. I think avoiding conflict that happens and not addressing it right away just leads to deeper problems in the future. Some things that I'm experiencing right now, actually. But, you know, I wanted to go back kind of to the point that you brought up, Brian, about not listening to people that you're organizing with or that you're trying to bring into an organization. And it made me think about a mistake that I wanted to mention is not replicating the top-down structure of what you're trying to kind of organize against. So if you're in union organizing for teachers, you know, we have a very top-down structure in our school work sites, and you know, you find that unions also tend to have a top-down structure as far as, you know, actions come from the state, then go to the county, then go to the local level. And a lot of educators have a problem with being told in two different places what they should be doing.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And learning new structure can be a real challenge because that's something you get indoctrinated into wherever you get indoctrinated. You know, for me, it was unions. So when I formed 15 Now, that's basically my union's bylaws became ours with some changes to make it a little more socialist-y. But, it was based on bad structure, I think.
I think. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Chris, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think all of us are kind of used to a little bit of authoritarianism in our life, whether it's school, whether it's our religious institution, whether it's our job. So we can't help but replicating those structures when we try to create things on our own, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so-and-so is going to be the president. So-and-so is going to be, you know, the vice president. And it especially if you are the most committed or if you're someone, you know, I'm not saying myself, but if you're the most knowledgeable person on a subject or if you are the most competent in, you know, whatever it is you're doing, it's very easy to assume control and it's very easy for other people to defer to you. So you shouldn't hold it against yourself. I think if you start to replicate that structure, I think it's important to acknowledge it and then move forward. And as you said, you know, listening to the working people before, it's, you know, take a step back and, you know, what are people saying? You know, I try to self-criticize, and when I'm with my DSA comrades, when we can get a meeting together, it's hard, but I try not to make a decision without their input, and I will always defer to the majority in my organization.
What I've tried to do here is reverse the model where I used to join organizations and we would come up with rules and bylaws and officers first and just do stuff with people, you know, yeah. And just like hang out and see what happens. And then as you need to create structure, it'll come out of necessity. I mean, you do at some point have to designate responsibility and have chains of communication, but it doesn't have to be authoritarian and it doesn't have to be based on previous models.
Yes.
So I think maybe a trick I've learned and that I've applied here at New Jersey Revolution Radio, where I didn't know, I just was just me talking on as I drove to work. And then I just kind of let that develop into what we have here today and what's growing. And I really don't know what it's going to be in a year or two from now. Yeah. But that's exciting and that's fun because it feels more like I'm creating something rather than, as Melissa put it, modeling the systems that I want to oppose. You know, I'm trying to think of new formations, and it gets a lot more creative juices flowing that way. I'm happy with the results so far. Has anybody had experiences with better models that they're implementing in any organizations that they work with that they like that are similar to that? It's anarchist-y a little bit.
I have, actually. I am a member of a caucus group called UCOR, United Caucus of Rank and File Educators. And that structure, we try to make it as flat as possible. There's kind of a steering committee, but that's a rotating steering committee. Decisions are all made consensus-based after, you know, a lot of talking and input. It does get frustrating at sometimes, and you have to have a lot of patience with that type of structure because those of us that are driven are always like, okay, well, let's just do it this way and get it done. But that's not always the best way to do things. Sometimes it's better to have that patience so ideas can fully develop. Everybody is giving their input and everybody has buy-in that way. And that's a very key, important part of organizing, is making sure that everybody has bought into what you want to do. That's how you get the most results out of the actions that you're doing from that. Nice face, Brian.
Don't stop talking while I'm taking a sip of water.
Brian has the glass. Somebody else has to keep talking.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say I could definitely learn more patience most of the time. That is definitely, I don't think a lesson I've quite learned yet, but I'd like to model that level of patience that Melissa has.
See, and I don't think I have a lot of patience at all. You hear me sometimes. I'm like, oh, these people. But you know, it's part of what you have to do.
Well, bitching to your comrades behind the scenes versus the front, the face you present to the people you're working with, you know, can be, everyone needs to vent to their comrades a bit.
Yeah. And they especially should do it on a live stream where nobody's listening.
Yeah. If you need to be real with your comrades, then you need to reevaluate what you're doing. I mean, you got socialism ultimately is about being social, right? You have to be able to communicate effectively and, you know, you got to have a good time, right? I mean, if you're organizing, if you're out there going door to door, if you're, you know, trying to get votes for an issue or you're making phone calls, you got to have some pep in your step and you got to have to like it. If you call up the phone and if you call someone up and you just sound like an irritated old jabroni, nobody's going to want to hear you. Nobody's going to care what you have to say.
So we touched on a little bit of, and you just did there again, but I think Melissa talked about like turning people off by being too authoritarian and stuff. The grumpy person can be utilized, but not if they're grumpy with the organization.
Absolutely.
Have you ever been able to turn around those people, though? Have you ever had that grumpy person come into a meeting or be dissatisfied with the organization and been able to work with them and talk to them about their issue and actually got them to be positive again about the issue?
I've never encountered that issue personally. Usually when people show up, they're down, they're ready to do something good. There's, you know, either one or a handful of issues that they're interested in and they're ready to help out. I guess it's a good thing that I'm the grumpiest person in the group. I don't think I could tolerate anybody more grumpy than me. But I like when I'm organizing, when I'm with people, when we have our DSA meetings, we had some people come in to talk about healthcare. For me personally, it's important to put my professional face on. Sometimes I remember I was at a Central Jersey DSA meeting, and I was trying to start the Jersey Shore chapter. And at a couple moments, I felt like I was coming across as fake because I felt like I was trying too hard to be a nice guy. I had on my professional face, like my my old, you know, high school customer service voice and all that. But like I said, for me, like I said, I wanted to be an effective communicator, and I wanted to convey that onto them my enthusiasm for the cause.
I know professionally, you know, as a union rep, there's no greater challenge than that person that comes in and hates the union because they're mad about whatever. They're mad about their case. They're mad about the contract. They're mad about something. And I view that as an opportunity because, you know, I like to make my own life more difficult, you know, but
that's a teachable moment.
Yeah. You know, it's a teachable moment. And also to hear why people are grumpy with the union and actually use it for input. I think people there's a dismissive or a defensive attitude. I think one of the defensive mechanisms we have is to become dismissive because somebody is angry, right? And they're just being grumpy or they're just being, they're being unreasonable or whatever.
Maybe you just describe social media.
Yeah, maybe, you know, but be able to look past that anger, which could be very justified, and hear the issue is something you actually have to develop an ear for, because there is a tendency sometimes to just be dismissive of somebody who's angry because you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear I guess you take it personally.
Yeah.
I've learned to beat that back a little bit and not take it personally and view it as, hey, I want to convince this person that unions are a good thing. Because they are, right?
Do you find people like their default position is more critical of the union, or because you meet some union guys and they are union and proud, and then you meet some other guys who just like, the union. They I know, I've never really met anybody who can kind of put their finger on what the problems are. I do have one friend who's a woman, and she says she has to deal with a lot of misogyny at her union, and I absolutely see that as something that's realistic. But do you come across people that are more pro union and more angry union? Like when they come in and they don't really know what's going on, what are you usually dealing with?
I want to hear from my sister on misogyny and unions.
You would bounce at my court.
I didn't say I have two sisters here. I didn't say which one.
There has been a lot of misogyny in unions. Particularly you find it in educator unions because most of the rank and file members are female because most of the workforce is female. And for a long amount of time, most of the union leaders were male. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into specifics about NJEA, but you know, when you're facing that, turn the table real quick. Yes. When you're facing that angry union member, it is important to have a conversation and see if you can get to the root of it. A lot of them, it's because they haven't been given a sense of the historical impact that unions have had.
Yes.
And why we really need unions and what unions have given us. Also, I find that a lot of them they get frustrated at the structure. So here we are back to the oppressive top-down structure. They don't know how to navigate the structure to be able to access what they want to access information or guidance or whatever they need. So they get frustrated. There's a group of us that have become, you know, kind of adept at helping those members navigate the structure and to kind of ease that access. And if we have the information, we very willingly give it ourselves or connect them with people that can get them the information or get them, you know, what their need is. So, you know, it takes a lot of realization that a union is only as good as its members, right? A chain is only as good as its weakest link. All of that is so true. So when you're talking about unions, you're talking about yourselves, and rank and file union members need to realize that and grasp it, especially at this moment in time. You know, it's going to be ever so important come September, and we see Red for Ed strikes start popping up across the country. Seattle, LA, Virginia.
We're always glad to hear that.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting school year.
Chris, you asked me before we got into Melissa, you had asked me a question about dealing with union structure, I guess.
Well, I guess like the new guy comes in, new guy on the job, blue collar guy, maybe he's a roughneck. They don't teach about unions in school.
Right.
You get one lesson maybe from the 20s and 30s, another lesson from maybe the 60s, if you're lucky, and that's about it. But all you get is a lot of the BS right-wing rhetoric about union bosses instead of like the actual bosses and union dues as opposed to the surplus value of labor that they're taking away from you. So you get these guys coming in. Are they bright-eyed, hey, let's do this union thing? Or are they coming in with their guard up saying, hey, I don't really trust this Brian guy, I don't know him? Are they coming in positive or are they coming in negative?
I have been, and everybody knows I'm not afraid. I love unions. My career is in labor unions, but I haven't been afraid to talk about things we've done wrong over the past decades, 44 decades or so. And I think one of them is we have done an absolutely horrendous job at PR. I have not seen advertising campaigns for join a union. I have not seen billboards. I see Americans for Prosperity. I see, yeah, I see Coke-funded groups out there, but I don't see the public relations push or the organizing push from labor. I think we would depend on our relationship with the Democratic Party as the primary source of our power. And I think that's a very off political strategy. I think that, they're coming into the door not knowing what labor unions have done and relying on that Stewart over the next, year or so to educate somebody in the workplace is putting a large burden on our grassroots organizers to teach people the very basics. Now, we can also talk about educational programs, college programs, teaching labor history in schools is certainly all part of that conversation. But I think unions kind of going into this shell almost of saying, we're just going to work with politics and we're going to influence politics and that's going to be how we wield power has been disastrous. I mean, it's just been disastrous. You can't look at organizing numbers and say it any different. So I think that we have to think about educating people as they walk in the door. So I'm not dealing with the situation I'm dealing with when that happens. Yeah. And the situation is you're going to have to take them, and that's got to happen at that grassroots level. That means training shop stewards. That means making sure leaders have a program in place to educate shop stewards about labor history and about their rights in the workplace. And so when you come in and you're new, that shop steward can come over and say, hey, man, this is what a union's about. This is our history. And then they can pass it along. But I still think I do blame top leadership a lot for not demonstrating to the general American public the good that labor unions do as a society. And I hate to go on too long, but I take that Marxist view. I take that unions are centers of working class power, and we should teach union members, not only are unions good for you and your benefits and your pay, but we collect up resources here and can use them in ways that benefit your friends, your family, your neighbors, your schools, all of that. If we treat it as a center of working class power. So there's a couple things you need to do differently that I think will help that conversation that you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm going to say when it comes to labor unions versus education unions have it almost a little bit easier in that frame because we have always recognized that the union is what's enables us to be able to advocate for the students. So we already have that community tie-in and that community benefit. Whereas with that's labor true. Unions, it's not so readily apparent that, okay, increased and better wages is what's helping the community economically to develop and to grow. So it's a little bit more of a struggle.
It's a little weak.
It's
a little bit of a weak argument, but that means they should put up more of a struggle, do more community programs, run a food bank, do things in the community that overcome that little bit of an obstacle that they don't seem to be as engaged. And what's the word? I guess myopic a little bit, I think they can be.
Yeah. Which takes us back to the old history of labor unions and all the work that they really did.
That's true.
I don't think people realize how much of the modern world, like, I don't know how to put it, how good we have it. As bad as we have it, I don't think people realize how good we have it because of the sacrifice of labor unions. I had to read a book a couple of years ago about the Wobblies. It's called The Wobblies in Their Heyday, and people died.
People were
lynched, and we're not talking about black men. We're talking about white Protestant men who are lynched, being thrown off of bridges, murdered. Pinkertons, they made their money breaking up unions, shooting people. And I think it's important to acknowledge the sacrifice that people have, the sacrifices that people have made in the past for, you know, an 8-hour workday, taking kids out of mines. People got shot at for wanting to take kids out of mines. It's obscene. And Americans don't know that. If you're lucky and you had a history teacher that was with it, you have some understanding of it. But unfortunately, most of the people in this country lack that education. They don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the racial injustice, though, we have to say, was, you know, this country was built on slavery.
Absolutely.
So I mean, you know, and unions have fought against, you know, essentially slavery because they demand wages and benefits. Although we have problems with racism within union ranks, and that's a whole maybe another panel someday. We're gonna have to get off unions because Heather's not the only one here that's not in a union.
Yep.
Sorry,
I'm a freelancer.
About that. Very sorry about that. But I did. I mean, I guess I want to pick on you one more time before we close it out, and talk about a new mistake that you've made. And I'll share one as well. But with New Jersey Revolution Radio, what do you think we could have done better so far? I got to think of one.
That's a good question.
Isn't it? I got to think of one myself. I'm regretting it.
I don't know. I'm kind of enjoying the co-Stalin organizing method we use here at New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Nobody understands that joke except me.
That's going to get taken out of context.
It could be.
Possibly.
There's no good context.
New Jersey Revolution Radio.
In the American ether, there is no good context for being compared to Stalin. However, I don't give a shit. So I have often referred to my style as a bit Stalin-like because I've had problems, you know, with democracy and other people making decisions. So
you need to work on your mustache then.
Maybe.
That's your most recent mistake, is not working on the mustache.
I'm really bad at being Stalin because I got a partner that's 50-50 in New Jersey Revolution Radio and Stalin.
Oh, you can't have that.
So I think maybe I'm not earning that reputation as well. But we, when we were discussing what our titles would be, right? Senior, I like senior organizer. She had some other ideas. And I just said we would be co-Stalins. I like that. I think that'll look good on a business card.
Too bad we just got our business cards printed.
You can get more.
I think, though, I don't know. We could be possibly a little bit more accessible. People say they find us intimidating. So
yes. We
should try to be aware of if we are being intimidating. I guess the two of us together definitely can be an intimidating.
Intimidating in what way, though?
Well, I know what she's talking about because this is the exact same mistake I was going to talk about. And it's not, and it's maybe some in our own heads a little bit. But what I feel is I don't think people were ready for New Jersey Revolution Radio so much.
They never are.
That I don't think and I don't think the left so much was prepared for in New Jersey for this. So people are a little shocked and kind of hesitant to jump on board because they may view it as Brian's project or Heather's project, where it's not. It really is something that, as I was thinking about what I wanted to do next, was something that would include what I consider a community of activists. Because in my years organizing and getting around the state and working with so many wonderful people, I just thought there was something there if we had something that showed off my friends and showed off my comrades and showed off, you know, all this great work that people are doing against racism. So, you know, I want to make sure that's being conveyed in the way we go about our business, that it's not the Brian show, it's not the Heather show, it's the New Jersey activist scenes thing.
Look, this is a great idea. This is a great program, and I am 100% proud to be a part of it.
Hey.
I think we have, you know, similar viewpoints, similar ends, and I'm here to help the project along as much as I can. It gets the Christian Perez seal of approval, the Garandam T.
But that endorsement means quite a bit. We do have to wrap it up. I'll let Melissa plug her stuff first. Because she jumped in late, she should get priority. Appreciate you coming on. Melissa, what's going on in the world of Melissa?
So Badass Teachers is working on a educator data privacy toolkit. We did research over the past year about students and where their data is going and things educators need to be aware of. So that's going to be released soon. Working on midterm elections, of course. I have a lot of states involved in that. And we're also working with We Choose, Eros, and other organizations about federal education funding, sustainable community schools. So some stuff will be coming out with that. What else? Oh, Black Lives Matter at Schools, national week of action will be coming forward, and that is growing. The leaders of that are doing a lot of good things with the curriculum and the events across the nation.
Cool. Christian, what do you have any events, DSA doing anything? Other, we know your podcast.
Yeah, so we're in between trying to set up meetings now. Again, it's like trying to herd cats sometimes. I don't hold that against my comrades. As I said, it's just, there's not a lot of us, and we are all working professionals. But if anyone is interested in Jersey Shore DSA, we are operating within Monmouth and Ocean counties. You can contact us at jerseyshoredsa@gmail.com. And I answer most of those emails, so you'll be talking to me. If you're interested in my podcast, it's called Modernity and Absurdity. It's on Facebook. That's the main page. You can find me on Twitter at Perez Podcast. My email is perezpodcast@gmail.com. The podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And soon to be New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Yes, starting tomorrow, your podcast will be going out on our network. And then every Thursday for the next four Thursdays, Modernity and Absurdity is going to be a part of our network. Thanks a lot, man. Heather, what kind of work do we have to do?
All right. Well, first thing is tomorrow, although I'm not a DSA member, DSA is hosting a meet and greet with my candidate that I'm campaign managing, Dr. Steve Finichel. That's going to be 6:30 at the Mays Landing Library. Come out, talk to the good doctor. I'll be plugging a little bit for New Jersey Revolution Radio there, of course. And, what else is going on? We are starting planning our 100th episode.
Yes.
So we're looking to celebrate the activist community for that 100th episode.
Yes.
We're closing in there. We're really getting close now.
We would love, and we talked a little bit about this, and I'll do some calling this weekend on this, but if you're out there in New Jersey Revolution Radio land and you like what we do and you have a little coffee shop or something with a little stage we can go up on and maybe do a live podcast to celebrate the 100th production of New Jersey Revolution Radio, we think that might be a neat thing to do. So I'm going to open it up here. Email us info@njrevolutionradio.com. Let us know about your space. If you want it, we'll come by and we'll talk about promoting a small, ethical, good wage paying business. Do not try to book me at Walmart unless, you know, we're going to take the place over and give it back to the workers during the broadcast. Thanks a lot, everybody, for joining me. Thanks a lot for listening to the podcast tonight, everybody. Again, the website is www.njrevolutionradio.com. Go there if you want to support us. Any little bit helps. 5, 10, 15, 25 bucks a month. We'll send you stuff. We'll mention you on the podcast. We'll talk good about you. We'll send you a free thing sometime. I don't know. We'll figure it out. That's what we're promoting right now. I appreciate your support. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night. Good night.